Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So like I said, you know, these conspiracy theories really, you know, they kind of, at a certain level, they kind of make me laugh because they're creative. Look, if your mind can expand to thinking that our military having joint operations in the desert to simulate activities in places like Iraq and Afghanistan is akin to taking over the country. And you actually had, you know, Texas Governor Greg Abbott at the time, you know, calling up the National Guard like they're going to fight the U.S. military. It was crazy, crazy times. But you know, look, fun in the country. But again, back to the big lie, being the big lie. I'm here to share some thoughts on the latest of the big lies. I've asked our good friend Joe Walsh to come back and share some thoughts. Joe's a former Illinois congressman, Tea Party guy, Freedom Caucus guy, all of that stuff, former presidential candidate. He is the host of the F Silence podcast. You can find that at fsilencepodcast.com. Joe, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, my brother, how the heck are you?
I am fantastic. I'm looking at yesterday's big news story that got almost no attention in my view. Of the two-page memo that said, you know what? Yeah, we were gonna do a little coup, little winter coup. Nothing wrong with that, Joe.
Most of America, Rick, I think damn near all of us have no idea how close we came to an actual coup earlier this year. I agree, Rick, with exactly what you just said. Shoulda, woulda, coulda, should have been the biggest story of the day again yesterday. In writing, there it is, just reinforcing what we all know. I say this every day, Rick. I try to tweet it once a week. A sitting American president tried to overturn an American election. Don't ever forget that.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's incredible. And it's right there in writing. And the thing, you know, here's the thing that gets me. As I was sitting reading it, and now for you and for me, and I think for most people who were paying attention during that period, none of this stuff was new. They trial ballooned all of this. But to see it all in writing in one place in a very methodical way of this is what's going to happen. This is how we're going to break precedent. This is how we're going to get the next person to do this. And ultimately, we're going to win. It was chilling. I'll be honest. I sat here and I go, this should have worked.
Hey, Rick, I served with Mike Pence in Congress. At the time, I really liked Mike Pence. I've obviously lost a lot of respect for him, but for him, I mean, I read that memo and some of what we've read, some of the excerpts from Woodward's and Costa's book, and when you realize how close Mike Pence came to doing some of this, and the fact that Mike Pence acknowledges that he struggled with this. Struggled?
Yeah.
But imagine, I mean, anybody else, any other vice president, you know, could have, might have gone along with this.
And the fact that he went to Vice President Potato, I mean, I didn't know Dan Quayle was still around. And yet, you know,
my friend.
History is going to remember Dan Quayle, not for the potato thing. Because right now I'm thinking Dan Quayle, you know, best vice president ever.
But to me, the biggest takeaway is, Rick, that Mike Pence actually struggled with what he should do. And, you know, Donald Trump said, do this or I'll never be your friend again. Well, that's Trump. And we know who Trump is. He's a traitor. He's a horrible human being. But how could anybody struggle with what you had to do? There was no struggle. And thank God Mike Pence did the right thing at the end of the day. But again, Rick, we came a lot closer than anybody knows.
No, I mean, and that's, again, that's the scary thing. And it goes back to our history because, again, I was reading through this 6-point memo, and a lot of it, you know, goes back to history, you know, Adams, Jefferson. So they've made a historical connection with, you know, with the founding fathers and how this could play out and how they were going to, you know, heap it in. You know, this is how the founding fathers wanted it because this is how it's happened before. And you go, no, this isn't how it happened before. Good try to rewrite history, though.
But here's the point for us. Here's the scary, freaky point for us. The guy who did try to overturn the election, the guy who did push a coup, is the leader of one of America's two major political parties. He's the most popular Republican. He's the undisputed leader of the party. And if he wants to be the nominee in 2024, he will not be challenged. And no Republican, I mean, God bless Kinzinger and Cheney, but Republicans refuse to call any of this out.
I mean, and that's the thing that gets me. I mean, this is right before our eyes. This is the smoking gun. And like I said, none of this stuff was new. I remember talking about, you know, back in November, how the House of Representatives would vote, you had 26 votes, and that's where they wanted to get to, and how they were going to break the election Electoral Count Act, and how they were. This was not new, but for me, and I know I said this before, but to see this in writing, in such clarity, I mean, that's the thing that, you know, again, nothing new here for me. But to see it in writing from a White House lawyer that you know Trump had eyes on and approved, that's what just sent chills down my spine.
That's so interesting, Rick. You and I reacted very differently to this memo because it didn't send chills down my spine, because I've had the chills down my spine for the last almost 7 or 8 months. I first had chills down my spine last summer, 5 months before the election, when Trump began to talk about how the election was going to be rigged, when a president began to lie about the election before the election.
Yeah.
I had chills down my spine when Trump incited an insurrection, and then the damn insurrection happened. So you talk about a smoking gun, I agree. But the smoking gun all along has been Trump, who has lied about this election, and he continues to do it.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and this is where, you know, you go, for you, it was him, you know, talking about the election going to be stolen in 2020. I was talking about in 2015 that he was already laying this groundwork. This was always the game plan. So they just, you know, they just followed through on it. And, you know, when I look at this stuff, this, I guess I have to put this in a question, because I look at this stuff and I go, you know what, they knew that all of the voter fraud claims, all of the election irregularity claims, you know, all of that stuff, they knew that was all BS. That was all the big lie, except for maybe the MyPillow guy and Rudy Giuliani, who they're probably just, they didn't read in on and they were just goofing on. They knew all that was BS. They wanted to get to here where they could just completely overturn the election and win that way.
And the guys I know, the Mark Meadows and the Jim Jordans of the world, they know that they've known all along this is BS. And they've all gone along with Trump. And really, guys like Meadows and Jordan, they've egged him on. Knowing this is bullshit, they've egged him on to continue out there to push the big lie. But Rick, I get less angry at, you know, Green and Gates and Meadows and Jordan. I get angrier at all the other Republicans who just don't even open their mouths and they just don't say a thing.
Yeah.
They know better.
No, I agree with you. I mean, you know, I expect the extreme crowd. I expect the Scott Perry in my neck of the woods to go along with whatever, you know, whatever. But it's, you know, the rest of them that you would think had something of a conscience. But again, you know, here's where you and I are going to differ. I have said the Republican Party has been off the rails for a very long time, and you know, take this how you have to. It was 2010 that things went really off the rails. I'll go back to 94 when it went, you know, off the rails. It seems like the party's been going further to the extreme right for a very long time, and you can counter, you can do that, and then the left has gone further to the left, and I agree. We're in dangerous waters.
And having been part of what that movement that you would say went off the rails, I mean, I got elected in 2010. Even if I agreed with you, and I do some, Rick, off the rails, more extreme, but based on issues. I mean, maybe we were extreme on some of the social issues. Maybe we were extreme on shutting down the government or the debt or stopping Obamacare. Fine, but issues based and always pushing issues. And maybe, again, we were extreme. The party now, Rick, is anti-democracy. The party now attacks our very democracy. We're not talking about, you know, arguing about the debt or Obamacare. They're talking about overturning the election. This is a wholly different place.
And the weird thing is, and maybe you still get people who think that Obama or Trump's coming back, that he's going to be reinstalled at some point very soon. I actually know people who think it's any day. You mark my words, he's coming back any day now. And I'm going, the election's over.
Rick, I hear it every day. Because I still engage with hundreds of GOP-based voters every day, yeah, I hear that stuff every day.
Just crazy. And, you know, I keep coming back to these conspiracy theories, you know, on everything top to bottom, from vaccines to, you know, I just remember Jade Helm 15, which was a blast from the past. And I'm going, you know, we've been heading down this, you know, we've always had fringe characters who've had fringe ideas, and they were always tolerable because their numbers were negligible and people just kind of, yeah, go ahead. Now they're in the mainstream, it seems, of the Republican Party, and we've got a media structure that keeps feeding that fire.
You've always, Rick, we've always had radical elements on both sides.
Yeah, yeah.
But now you are correct. The entire base of one of our two major political parties is now fully radicalized. I mean fully radicalized in that, as you've said eloquently, they're living in la-la land, in a land of conspiracies and untruths. And I hear it every day. And they don't believe January 6th was any big deal. I mean, and they don't trust the vaccines. You know, I can go on and on and on. But that is the entire base. And they don't believe Joe Biden won. The entire base of the party, that's where they are now.
Is any help for them, or is this, you know, the rest of the country is going to have to figure out how to maneuver around them?
So some of them can be saved, and I'm able to move some of them every week, but the vast majority, no. The Republican Party, as you and I have said before, Rick, it's a party of old white men and old white women, and they're not being replaced, and old white men and old white women eventually die. And most of those folks, you are not going to save.
Yeah, but you know, the loudest ones I see are young people who are figuring out, are who I call the grifters. They've figured out how to make a substantial living off of pushing these conspiracies, selling their snake oil and beet juice and all that stuff. So I don't see that going away anytime soon. So I don't know that the Republican Party is going to change anytime in my lifetime. And it's going to lead for an interesting next year, because I don't think we're going to get an infrastructure bill. And if we do, it's only going to be the bipartisan one. And I think Democrats are going to lose the House and the Senate.
Well, two things. I believe, and I've said it now publicly for a couple of years, we don't get it yet, but we're watching the death of one of our two major political parties. I believe the Republican Party is dying. I believe it's going to become a rural red state regional party. I think that's enough for them to take control of the House next year. I think you're right. I think they probably will, especially, Rick, if the Democrats step all over themselves and don't at least come together and approve the basic infrastructure package. If they can't do that, if the Democrats, you know, blot all over themselves and blow infrastructure, then they're going to lose the House.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Let me ask you this. You know, given the situation we're in right now, where you've got Manchin and Sinema who are saying, no, we don't get the one we want. We're not going to give you anything over there, and kind of boogering all this up. And you got the progressives in the House going, well, if we're not going to get the $3.5 trillion, we're not going to give you the other one. Do you see Republicans in the House coming around and going, you know what? We're gonna vote for the bipartisan bill, just to send a wedge in the Democratic Party. Do you see that possible?
No, I don't. And based on some conversations I'm having privately, I think Republicans generally are going to still hold firm against even the bipartisan package and just put it all on Dems. And again, Rick, I don't know. I don't know exactly where you stand on this, but. And I've been in these turf wars before. My God, you have an opportunity to at least pass a basic roads, bridges, and broadband package. Do it.
Yep. No, I've said from the start, I want both. You're not going to get $3.5 trillion. Manchin's already said no. If he's going to give me a trillion, we take it. We get it. We get it put into place. We get that program moving. May not be as much funding as we need, want, whatever, but we get it moving and we expand from there. But you gotta take something back home. Bacon's got to get back onto the plates at home.
Absolutely, and I'm not a Democrat. If I were advising Democrats, take that. I mean, my God, when's the last time we passed an infrastructure package? Take that, and the American people generally agree with Biden on what he's doing with COVID. That would be then a pretty decent record to run on in 2022.
Yeah, no, you got to have something, and it's got to be the jobs that are going to be created. And look, for me, this bill should have been already passed months ago so that we were starting to get some of this investment out here in the fall so that come springtime, people are really, we got the economy smoking. And you're heading in the right direction because people generally vote on how they feel at that moment. Yes. Economically, if you're doing well, you're going to stay with the horse that got you there.
I have all the respect in the world, Rick. I really do for Nancy Pelosi. I think she's tough and brilliant. I don't know why she's let this drag on so long. Pass that damn bipartisan package.
Yeah, for me, it's that simple. Last question I've got for you because on the vaccine front. You know, my right-wing friends are losing their ever-loving flipping minds over the mandate that, and I've been saying, look, capitalism will decide. Corporate America, since government can't figure this out, you know, the private sector is going to have to. You know, private employers saying you have to be vaccinated, you can't get on a plane, you do all those things. You agree or disagree?
Private employers have the right to do whatever they want to do. You know, you can't come into my establishment unless you're vaccinated. You can't work here unless you're vaccinated. Yep. I've got no problems with any of that. I get a little shakier when the government comes in and says, you've got to get vaccinated, or especially says to businesses, you have to. I'd rather that come from the private sector.
Yeah, I say we have to use the Department of Labor to keep workers safe. Me as a worker, when I go into the workplace, I want to make sure I'm safe. But Joe, I appreciate the time. As always, great talking with you, my friend.
Keep slugging, Rick. Thank you, man.
Nice stuff. I appreciate it. Joe Walsh, former Illinois congressman. Make sure you check out his podcast, fsilencepodcast.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.